about. So quantum key distribution allows two people to share a small amount of authentication information to communicate in absolute security in the presence of an eavesdropper. And quantum key distribution provides absolute security, which is based on the fundamentals of the fundamental laws of quantum mechanics rather than on computational assumptions. So basically, when there is any eavesdropping, Alice and Bob will be able to catch her. So, for example, when there's an Eve in the middle of the conversation between Alice and Bob, they will be able to catch Eve. So one question we would like to ask is that are practical quantum key distribution really secure in practice? Because we already know that quantum key distribution protocols have been proved to be unconditionally secured, even with imperfect devices. And here there's a list of proofs that prove the security of QKD's protocols. For example, in there's one by Mayers and Low and Chow, and the list goes on. So given that, we know that quantum key distributions are secure. Does that mean that is it the end of the security investigation of quantum key distribution? And the answer is, our answer is not really, because in practical quantum key distribution system, there may be many imperfections that are not considered by standard security proofs. And if you just blindly apply standard security proof to practical system, that may lead to potential security loophole. And this, in this talk in particular, we consider one practical imperfection, which is the detector efficiency mismatch. So in this picture here, we show our typical quantum key distribution system using the phase coding. So there are two input signals going into Bob. One signal carries the information, and the other signal carries the reference. So these two signals interfere at a beam splitter to produce a bit value, 0 or bit 1. So in many QKD systems, there are usually two detectors for detecting bit 1 and for detecting bit 0. And in practice, these two detectors may not have the same efficiency profile. So for example, the efficiency profile shown here may be different from the efficiency profile for bit 1. Well, here they are similar, but in practice, there can be imperfections in the electronics, for example, that will give rise to different detection efficiency. So in many QKD systems, detectors are often operated in the gated mode. So what that means is that the detectors are only turned on for a short period of time when the signal is expected to arrive at Bob. And because of that, detectors can have different efficiencies in practice. So this picture shows the efficiency curves for two detectors. So the red curve shows the efficiency for detector 0, and the green curve is for detector 1. So normally, signals are expected to arrive at the middle of the two curves, so at around T0. And when signals arrive here, the efficiency for both detectors are identical. So so that you can apply standard security proof to this situation. But what in practice, what Eve can do is that she can take advantage of this difference between the two efficiency by arranging signals to go to the detectors at different times. For example, she can shift the signals so that it will arrive at here instead of at the normal time of arrival. So there has been two attacks proposed that exploit the efficiency mismatch in detectors. So one attack proposed by Makarov and his colleagues is the so-called fake state attack. So in this attack, what Eve does is that she measures Alice's signal and sends a time-shifted signal to Bob. So in this attack, because Eve is making a measurement on Alice's signal, so that means that she will introduce some error in Bob's data. So another attack that exploits the efficiency mismatch is the so-called time shift attack. And this attack is proposed by our group. And in this attack, what Eve does is that she simply time shifts the signal sent out by Alice. And because she is not making any measurements, so no error is introduced by this attack. So let me just briefly go over the idea of the time shift attack, which is proposed by our group. So on the first graph here, this is the efficiency curves for the two detectors, one for detecting zero and the other one for detecting one. And the horizontal axis is time. So as time goes on, signals are being sent to Bob by Alice. So when you consider the situation where Eve is not present, the signal will arrive at a time that is basically in the middle of the two efficiencies. So because so that means that the efficiencies for detecting one and zero are identical, and in that situation, you can apply standard security proof to it to generate secret key. But let's consider the case where Eve is applying the time shift attack. So basically, what Eve does is that she time shifts the signal to a different time, to an earlier time or to a later time. So in this case, in this example, we show that Eve is shifting the signal to the right. So in this case, the efficiency for detecting one is much higher than the efficiency for detecting zero. And because of that, Eve is able to exploit this difference in the efficiency to gain some information on the final key if Alice and Bob are applying standard security proof. So in the previous graph, because if you notice carefully, when Eve is only shifting to the right, then the number of ones detected by Bob will be much more than the number of zeros detected by Bob. And this asymmetry in the number of detections of ones and zeros may give Bob the ability to detect Eve. So we have a second strategy, which basically finds two time shifts, one shift to the left and one shift to the right. So because the one shifting to the, if you shift to the right, there will be more number of ones. And if you shift to the left, there will be more number of zeros. So if you combine them carefully, then it is possible to have the equal number of ones and zeros detected by Bob. And this will allow Eve to hide her presence. So basically, the strategy here is that Eve finds two time shifts with large efficiency mismatch, and she randomly shifts the time forward or backward randomly, and she chooses the probability of shifting forward and backward carefully so that the number of ones and the number of zeros are identical. So here shows an experimental picture for the experiment. So this box represents a Eve attack. Basically, there are one long arm and one short arm. So the long arm corresponds to shifting to the right in time, and the short arm corresponds to shifting to the left. And basically, Eve has a switch that selects which path the signal goes through. So let's look at some theoretical analysis of the attack. So here we assume the BB84 protocol, and there's no error, suppose. So let's consider the first case that Alice and Bob are unaware of the efficiency mismatch. So in that case, they would just apply standard security proof to the to generate a secret key. And standard security proof guarantees that a key rate of from 0 to 1 is secure because there's no error in this case. But let's look at the case when there's let's look at the maximum key weight allowed with efficiency mismatch. So if we consider efficiency mismatch, we can compute the maximum allowed key rate. And it turns out that one possible maximum is this, which is so eta 0 is the efficiency for detecting 0, eta 1 is the efficiency for detecting 1, and h2 is the Shannon binary entropy function. And we minimize this expression over time to find the smallest efficiency ratio. So basically what that means is that the key rate from in this region is insecure. And if you compare this region with the region here, so that means that if Alice and Bob are just applying standard security proof, the final key generated in this, if they are using key rates in this region, the final key they generate may be insecure. So let's look at the third case that when Alice and Bob are aware of the efficiency mismatch. So in that case, they are applying a new security proof, which we are working on. And this security proof basically takes into account of the efficiency mismatch of the detectors. So in this case, the security proof guarantees that the secret key rate in this region is secure. So you can see that this expression here is always less than this expression here, assuming eta 0 is always less than eta 1. So in this case, if they apply the new security proof, they are able to generate a secure secret key. So in our group, we have performed an experiment to implement the our time shift attack. So basically, we have implemented the time shift attack in a commercial system from IT Quantic. And what we did is that we manually scan the time shift to compute the number of counts detected by Bob. So that's the experimental result of the efficiencies between the two detectors in our system. So the blue curve is for detector 0, and this curve is for detector 1. And in our experiment, we have selected these two points, these two times, for Eve to launch the time shift attack. So for 22% of the time, Eve uses the left point. And for 77% of the time, Eve uses the right point to launch her attack. And we have also computed the maximum allowed key rate with the efficiency mismatch, which is 6.08 times 10 to the minus 5. And we have also computed the actual key rate with standard security proof, which is 6.16 times 10 to the minus 5. And the important point to notice is that the actual key rate computed using standard security proof is higher than the maximum possible key rate. So what that means is that basically the final key shared by Alice and Bob is compromised by Eve, because they are applying a proof that does not take into account of the efficiency mismatch. And some information is about the key is leaked to Eve. So there are a few ways to counter the time shift attack. So the first way is proposed by Lagasse, which is a four-state measurement by Bob. And basically, in this method, what Bob does is that he flips the value of the incoming signal. So if, in effect, the interpretation of the detectors are changed. So for half of the time, a detector for detecting zero may be for detecting one for another half of the time. So another way to counter the time shift attack is to check the timing of the incoming pulse. And the third way is to use a security proof that considers efficiency mismatch in the detectors. And let's go to the conclusion. So in this talk, I've talked about the time shift attack, which exploits the detector efficiency mismatch. And when Alice and Bob are aware of our attack, and if they apply standard security proof, the final key they distill may be compromised by Eve, and no errors is introduced in this attack. And we demonstrated the time shift attack in an experiment, and we showed that we calculated that the final key is compromised. So one lesson we learned here is that when we apply a security proof to a practical QKD system, we need to verify every assumption of the security proof, see if they actually hold in the practical setting. So if we just blindly apply security proofs to a practical system without checking the validity of the assumptions, this may lead to security loophole. So thanks. So these are my sponsors. Yes. I think there's not much difference. I think the attack is not so sensitive to the loss. Whether it is high loss or low loss, I think the attack can still be applied quite efficiently. Yes. Yes, in our paper, we also consider a time multiplex detector. So for detecting one, maybe the detector is to resolve whether the bit is zero or one, we basically check the detection time of the detector. When the detector is clicking at an earlier time, then it corresponds to a bit one. When it is clicking at a later time, then it corresponds to detecting one. And there are two paths coming out from the beam splitter, right? For bit one, it may be a shorter path. For bit zero, maybe a longer path, right? So I think the path should be long enough to avoid the problem with the dead time, I think. Yes, let's look at this graph here. Well, in this experiment, because there's some intrinsic problem with the calibration program of the system, and because of that, that gives rise to this difference in the efficiency curves. But I mean, yeah, technically, it should be possible to somehow adjust the gating time so that they are aligned. But this difference actually comes from maybe some technical problem in the built-in calibration program of the system. But even if they are aligned, another point is that the efficiency curves are not exactly identical. So even if you align them, there may be still some mismatch. Well, I'm not exactly sure because I'm not an experimentalist, but.
All right, so that's the instruments again.
Okay, thanks.